Well, good morning, everyone. Kevin Reiner from the Brooks Group in Greensboro, North Carolina, and welcome to our AFRC Recruiting teleseminar called Coaching with Trimetrics. And joining me today will be my co-host, Mr. F.B. Whiteley. And Mr. Whiteley, would you please go over the housekeeping, and then I'm going to turn it over to Mr. Barnes, who's got some additional information for everyone.
Sure. These are the standard housekeeping rules that we normally have. Obviously, your comments, any questions that you have are welcomed. Just make sure you identify yourself, if you would, if you have a comment or a question. Also, if you're traveling, you're driving in a GSA vehicle or POV today, we prefer that you probably not try to dial in and listen and participate in today's session. Please don't put your phone on hold if you have recorded music in the background. I know most of us do not have that, but if you do, please don't put it on hold. If you need to mute your phone or your line, you can do that by hitting star 2 to either mute it and or to unmute it. We will not be taking roll today instead, so make sure that you send Mr. Barnes an email. That'll be at gbarnes@thebrooksgroup.com. The Brooks Group is all one word. To verify your attendance, make sure you include your name, your OL or squadron, and the 10-digit phone number that you're calling in from. That'll be helpful. The system will provide a printout with the phone number that was called into and how long it was online, so we know if you were able to stay connected with us throughout the session. And so other than that, I appreciate the opportunity to be here with you. We look forward to having a good session this morning.
Thank you, Mr. Whiteley. And now, Mr. Barnes, you've got an important announcement for everyone.
Yeah, we're doing something new here. For those of you that prefer, that are visual learners, that prefer to see it in front of you and you just want to take notes on the printout, we have a website that is accessible, whitelisted through the government, that I'll be displaying the slides, the pages of the report as we go through. And that website is www.clearslide, it's clearslide.com/J Wilburn. Again, that's www.clearslide.com/J Wilburn. And if you go to that website, you'll be able to see the slides, and I'll be advancing them to keep up with the discussion as they're going through the seminar today.
All right. Well, thank you, Mr. Barnes, and again, welcome to everyone. And one of the highlights, I think, of any program we do is when we have leadership on from the headquarters. And today we have Chief Zwelling. And Chief, I'm going to turn it over to you to say a few words to the audience.
Thank you, sir, and thanks to the Brooks Group for taking time to do this seminar. Thanks to all the flight chiefs out there. I know you guys are working super hard, and we definitely appreciate everything that you do. Today, you're going to be talking about coaching with Trimetrics, and everybody out there knows one of the most important things we do as flight chiefs is TCM, train, coach, and mentor. And I truly believe that the Trimetrics is an invaluable tool to use in doing this, because it not only helps you get to know yourself and your blind spots, your traits, but it helps you understand your team better, which I think is key to coaching and motivating your team. I personally use this ever since I've been a flight chief. I still use it today at headquarters with anybody that I supervise and all the airmen in the headquarters building. I can tell you I've read every single one of their Trimetrics, so when I talk to them, I reread it before I talk to them, if I counsel them or if we're talking about career management, so I know how to approach them, and it definitely helps out. So I think this is critical training, and please get the most out of it. We got three experts, Mr. Reinert, Mr. Barnes, and Mr. Whiteley. Use their knowledge to your advantage. Please participate. Please ask questions. And again, thanks for all you guys do. We truly appreciate it from headquarters. And that's
well,
all I got.
Thank you, Chief. We appreciate you being here. And for our audience out there, I don't think we could have said it better, the value of the Trimetric systems. In fact, Mr. Whiteley, our audience, everybody out there probably has taken a Trimetrics report at one time or another, and hopefully, just like the Chief, has used it to work with their people. But there's been some changes in the Trimetrics, and I'd like you to kind of brief everybody what's happening.
Yeah, the Brooks Group, in conjunction with their strategic partner, Target Training International, introduced a new version of this coaching report called the TriMetrics ACI, which we'll be covering today. We think these new reports will provide better feedback to help you coach your team members a little better, as well as understand yourself a little bit better. During today's program, we'll walk you through some of the new terminology and features of the TriMetrics ACI sales version. Hopefully all of you have a copy of this you can follow along with. Everyone should have a copy of the John Doe version of the report. We will guide you through the most important pages of information. We strongly suggest that you take some written notes on the sample report. Write all over it. Use it as it's something that you can use, like Chief Zwelling was saying, before you get ready to go speak to one of your folks, review their assessment. You know, look at your notes for the key important things that you need to go over with them. Given the fact that we only have an hour for this program, we'll not cover every section of the report. However, the plain language used in the report should make it easier for you to read and interpret the information.
So let's get started, and let me say this. If you have a question, please don't wait to the end of the program to ask it. I'll stop at various points along the way and offer you a chance to speak up. In fact, I'm going to ask the first question, and I'm going to answer the question that many of you may already have, and that is, what does the ACI stand for in TriMetrics ACI? Well, the answer is Acumen Capacity Index. And what is that? Well, the Acumen Capacity Index explores various details about how people think and interpret their experiences. This section of the report will give you a framework to identify, appreciate, and apply a person's unique talents based on their patterns of thought. In other words, it's going to answer the question, gee, why does this person act this way, or why do they feel this way in certain situations? It's an extremely helpful tool out there. And Mr. Whiteley, you're going to open things up. One of the things that hasn't changed about the report is behaviors. And so I'll let you talk about that. And Mr. Barnes, you're going to go to the first slide for those people that are on the Clear Slide program.
Yes, let's first flip over to page 2. I noticed the slide looks like that's on the screen is really small for me to see, so I'm going to have to refer over to my hard copy. But if you'll look at page 2, primarily in the bold print there, you'll notice it says behavioral research suggests the most effective people are those who understand themselves, both their strengths and weaknesses, so they can develop strategies to meet the demands of the environment. That's what we're talking about. In order for us to be better, for anyone to be better at what we do, we need to know both our strengths and our weaknesses. And we feel that this report, it measures 4 different dimensions of normal behavior. One is how you respond to problems and challenges. A second one is how you influence others to your point of view. The third is how you respond to the pace of the environment around you. And the fourth thing is how you respond to rules and procedures set by others.
Now, a question that I have for the audience is this. How many of you have been told by someone that maybe you supervise that they don't believe in the results of the reports, or that the report says things about them that they believe aren't true? Have any of you gotten pushback from some people about the accuracy of the reports?
Sometimes.
Okay.
Hey, Mr. Reiner?
Yes.
I'd like to ask this question. How many of you have actually sat down with your folks trying to use the TriMetrics already?
Hey, Chief, this is Senior Master Parker. We use the TriMetrics during the UTA, and what we do is we go over the attributes. And a lot of them, sometimes it's a real clear look at themselves, and they don't want to say that it's that's what it is. They don't want to say that's how they are, because it's really a good look at themselves.
Actually, yeah, sometimes it's hard for us to admit the things that we have a little weakness in. So that's where you have to coach them along with that. I'm sorry, Mr. Reiner. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, you know, yesterday as I was getting ready for the program, I went over my own personal report, and I got to admit, it was spot on. And there were things in there that I didn't like about myself that I saw, and I said, you know what? They're accurate, though, you know, because we're not perfect people. But it's really helped me a lot in dealing with others as I spot some of those blind spots. But here's the point I'm trying to get to, is when people disagree, there's a couple of reasons for it. One is, no assessment out there is 100% correct. We generally find that about 94% of the information is accurate in most cases. So therefore, there are some sentences within a report that may not be reflective of that person, in which case we just say, throw it out. If the person is convinced it's not true and maybe you haven't seen that behavior, okay, throw it out. It's not there. All right? Sometimes people have adapted their behavior to the point that the natural behavior that appears in the report is no longer relevant because people have successfully, you know, recognized that there have been some issues and changed their behavior accordingly. Now, sometimes the disagreement comes from when the person doesn't take the assessment seriously or simply doesn't like what's in there. And I, over the years, I've done a lot of programs, and I've heard people say, well, I didn't take the assessment seriously, and the assessment has some pretty poor comments in there. And I'll tell somebody, then it's accurate, because we don't have the choice in the Air Force of saying what I want to do and what I feel like doing. In other words, when somebody was given the assessment as part of their job, they should have answered it to the best of their ability. So I think that's very, very important, because if they didn't take that seriously, my comment is this: what else in their job are they not taking seriously that they don't feel like doing? So, Mr. Whiteley, you've got some advice for our audience out there about a couple of questions that you can ask people when you get ready to sit down and go over a report.
I think it's important that when you first sit down with your troop and you ask them, when you're face-to-face with them, ask them a couple questions. Ask them, one is, they read their entire report. So this will give some sort of idea as to whether or not they actually went through it or took the time to go through it. The next thing you want to ask is do they feel that the results are accurate? Like Mr. Reinert said previously, that they may disagree with some things. I find it interesting when they start to disagree with a lot of things, like that I just have them turn over to page 6. If everyone will flip over to page 6, if you'll notice here, this is value to the organization. If you'll always take them to that section, especially if they're disagreeing with anything that's on the assessment, or if they haven't even went through the assessment yet, I like to start with this page so we get things off on a positive note. What do you notice about the statements that are written here? I'll just read a couple of them. People-oriented, builds confidence in others, team player, verbalizes his feelings, negotiates conflicts. What are some of these, what is the primary characteristic of each of these statements?
Positive.
They're all positive, exactly. And so, do you think a person will agree or disagree with these statements?
More likely agree.
Mm-hmm. Most likely they'll agree. In fact, as long as I've been doing this, I've never had anyone say, no, that's not me. You know, I'm not people-oriented, or nope, I'm not a big thinker. You know, so they'll always agree with those things. And so if they agree with it, it allows them to become a little bit more accepting to the report as you go along in other sections.
When I have someone who has read the report and will say, you know, I'd say it's mostly accurate, or, you know, very accurate or something like that, then I will go right to page 3 of the report. So you're going to move back. This will be the only time we'll do this today, is we're going to move back to page 3, and you will see that there is what we call sales characteristics. And this section would describe how your recruiter would sell using their natural style. In other words, if left on their own, to just do it the way they most naturally would talk to people, these statements would reflect that. Now, you'll get some disagreement here. It's not uncommon. And the reason is, sometimes people don't like to see that maybe their behavior isn't as effective in certain areas, or they no longer actually do that behavior because this is the natural style, but they have adapted. They recognize that maybe they talk too much, for example, so they're making a conscious effort not to talk as much, or maybe they've been too direct with people and now they're starting to back off. So again, remind somebody, if they don't agree with this particular section, that no assessment is 100% correct, so the statement might not be true, and remind them that they may be modifying their behavior so that they are indeed more effective. So, sales characteristics. Now, Mr. Whiteley, there's a new part of the assessment in here that people haven't seen before, and that's over on page 5.
That's right. This was not in our previous coaching report. This particular chart here helps us measure a person's natural and adapted styles within each step of the impact selling system. The higher the score is, the more effective the person is in each step. So if you'll take a look there, you'll notice that each step is broken down. You have an adapted score, you have a natural score in those areas, in each of those areas. And obviously, if you have any area that's a significant difference in the score, such as if you'll notice in the meet step, the adapted score is 8.25 versus the natural score, which is 6.25. There's a 2-point difference there. This could cause the individual a little bit of stress, knowing that they're having to stretch a little bit, if you will. Now, the good news is that I think it could tell that the individual has learned at least what we teach everyone to do, is to meet in neutral, right, during the meet step. And so they've adapted their style in order to meet that of the customer. So there's not necessarily too much wrong with that, but I'd keep an eye on any of them that are significantly different, because it could cause some undue stress as well. If you'll look here, what style are they using? Is it the adapted style or their natural style that they're using the most, or they're the most successful with in the impact selling system?
Adapted.
Yeah, it's the adapted. That's exactly right. And sometimes that'll be the case for us. Obviously, it would be nice if we had someone who, they're just their natural style. They were just naturally good at this, and it would be very little stress on the individual. But overall, that's kind of what we're looking at here. We're looking at the differences between, and their strengths and their weaknesses between either their adapted or their natural styles.
All right, let's move on to page 7 of the report, and this is what's called Checklist for Communicating. And in my personal opinion, this is perhaps, this page and the next may be the two most important pages in the report. And what we have here is a list of ways that the individual taking the assessment would really like to be communicated with based on their natural behavior style. You know, a lot of times we have problems, you know, with people because we don't communicate, whether that's at home or at work or in any walk of life. A lot of times problems are communication problems because we don't approach people in the way that they would like to be approached. So one of the things we suggest here is to have the individual pick out 3 or 4 statements from this checklist for communicating that really hit the mark with them. In other words, the person says, "This is how I wish you and other people would approach me. When you've got something to say to me, I wish you would, you know, put the problem in writing," for example, in this John Doe example. Or, "When I ask you a question, I really would like a yes or no answer and not just a maybe." That provides a lot of open doors for people to really get their message back and forth. So these are good ways to communicate, but Mr. Whiteley, we can also make some mistakes. Talk about that on the next page, please.
Absolutely. Over on page 8, you'll see the ways not to communicate with an individual. This is really what these are the things that bother someone. When someone else is trying to communicate with them, especially you as the boss, sometimes they feel underappreciated and for what they're doing. So in order to eliminate some of that, these are just some things not to do when communicating. And this example, of course, is with John Doe. I also have them pick out 3 or 4 things on that list that they would prefer you not do when you're communicating with them. These are good things to, I think we mentioned yesterday, Mr. Reinert, you could have a training meeting basically and just discuss these topics throughout your team, because it's just as important for each of your recruiters to know these when they're talking to the other recruiters as it is for you to be able to talk to the recruiter or the recruiter to talk to you. And so they're just invaluable statements here and comments for you to keep in mind. When you get ready to communicate with them. I think you heard Chief Swelling say earlier, before he gets ready to counsel or talk to any of his troops there at headquarters, he reviews their assessment. And I'm sure he hits these things on how best to communicate with them. It makes the counseling, it makes the training, anything that you're doing with the individual run much smoother.
A very valuable tool, as Mr. Whiteley said, is to discuss this at a training meeting. Several years ago, after I left recruiting and I went over to public affairs, I was working with a new team of people. They didn't know me, and I was replacing a leader who had a different behavior style than I did. And I shared this information, and people said, wow, you do things a lot different than the previous leader did. And that helped open the doors. Things moved a lot faster because I was more of a quick decision maker. The person that I was replacing was somebody who thought things out over a longer period of time. Doesn't mean either way is right or wrong, but it was certainly different for the team. And knowing that they were going to be dealing with somebody who was going to move quicker was very, very helpful for them. Now, if we could, let's go over to the next section, which is going to be on page 10. So you'll skip page 9 and go to page 10. And this is what's called perception. This is how you see yourself and how others may see you. And the truth is, we not only communicate our messages to people through words, but through body language. In fact, most of what's communicated to other people are through nonverbal forms, and body language is the primary source of that. So at the top of the page, we have a self-perception. And in this case, John Doe, there's some words that describe how he sees himself. And I'll ask the audience this question. As you look at those words, how does John see himself? Does he see himself in a positive light or more of a negative light?
Positive.
He sees it as positive. Most people will think of themselves as pretty good people, and they'll see themselves in positive ways and use terms to say, yes, I'm good at this or I'm strong at that. Well, the truth is, most people are, but we all have bad days. Sometimes we have very bad days. And when that happens, when we're under stress, people may perceive us a little bit differently. And the second block on that page has the perception that others may have of us when we're under moderate stress and then when we're under extreme stress. Now, notice that it says others may see him as being. It doesn't mean every time you're having a bad day, this is the way you behave. But others may see you in some cases behaving in this particular way. And obviously, these statements are not as nice. So you may get some pushback in a situation like this. But that's okay. You know, you can say to the person, if they disagree with it, say, you know, talk to a couple other people and see if they feel the same way. And if they're honest enough to do that, they might find that that's the case. And for a lot of us, it's what we call a blind spot. We don't see ourselves behaving in that way, but in fact, we sometimes do. Now, Mr. Bradley, you're gonna skip several pages here and go to a place called Areas for Improvement.
Yeah, Mr. Reiner, I really like this page. It's over on page 15. It's Areas for Improvement. This is a part of the report you can go to that it just kind of, it's already outlined some of the things there for you to be aware of. And so if you'll notice there, you'll see on the report where it says John has a tendency to. I suggest that you read through this for each of your recruiters, see what maybe they have a tendency to do to some of these things. If you have observed some of those things, then obviously it'll just add validity to you once you see that it's in print from a report. You're like, yeah, man, they were spot on. You heard Mr. Reiner say he reviewed his assessment. And he says, yeah, man, there's things in there I don't necessarily like, but it's pretty much spot on. I would ask you to do the same thing with each of your recruiters. You'll look, and once you find something that's there, and this is when you're sitting down face-to-face with the individual, you know, you'll need to, at that point in time, just if you have examples that you can share with them, you know, one example is this, is that if you've witnessed it, just say, hey, you know, I've seen you promise someone a job before they were qualified. And we know that that happens frequently with recruiters that want to start talking jobs before they've ever sent them to the MEPS to get them tested and physical. And so if that's something that you have to identify there, and maybe it's something here, maybe it's if you look at number 4 there, giving away products or services to make their client happy. So it's nearly as though, hey, I need to keep this guy on the hook, make him happy, so I want to discuss some jobs with him or something. So this may be something you need to address. Make sure you offer some sort of advice for improvement. I'd always remember to go back to page 7 and 8, how they like to be communicated with when you're discussing those things. It'll make that process and that transition a lot smoother for you.
Any questions so far?
I do. This is CMS Sergeant Hogan at Kiesler.
Go ahead, Sergeant Hogan.
Hi. For keys to motivating, so, for example, a recruiter that needs freedom from rules and regulations, how do you do that as a flight chief?
Excellent question. We're going to cover that. There's actually a page called Keys to Motivating. We're going to discuss that page.
Okay. Sorry, I'm going further, but this is some good stuff. I appreciate this. Thank you.
Oh, no, that's okay. We love the questions out there, and believe it, we had some great questions yesterday, and, you know, there's no such thing as a bad question. So please, fire away. Okay. Anybody else have any other questions so far about the behaviors? Okay, if not, let's go to page 19 to what we call the behavioral hierarchy. And this has been an improvement in this particular program. We used to have this in the coaching report, but at one time we used to only measure 8 behaviors. We're on page 19 now. And the assessment measures now 12 behaviors that are commonly found in the workplace. And you'll see for each one of these behaviors, there is a horizontal bar. And if you're printed in color, you'll see that the horizontal bar is blue with a score from 0 to 10 possibly. And then below it, there's a box, a gray box. And that box, depending on which behavior, can be wider or thinner. And that box represents what we call 68% of the population, or what the mainstream. So that leaves 32% outside of the box. 16% can be to the right with a score. For example, frequent interaction with others, you'll see it's far to the right, which means that's a very, very strong behavior for John Doe. And then if a score is to the far left, as you will see an example on page 20 under Organized Workplace, they have a very low score of 1. Now, the higher the score is, the easier it is for somebody to exhibit that behavior. So in John Doe's case, when it comes to dealing with people, it's very easy for him. He likes to do that. He likes to be around people. That's important, okay? That's critical when talking to somebody about career management. For example, if you have somebody who really likes to interact with people and you say, well, there's a job up in the headquarters in the analysis branch where you're going to sit in a cubicle and not talk to anybody all day and just crunch numbers, you may find that person is not interested in a job like that because it doesn't meet their behavior style. Doesn't mean they can't do it, but it could mean they may not enjoy it, or it could be very stressful. Now, what about this low score that John Doe has in areas like organized workplace or analysis of data? Obviously, this is somebody who doesn't enjoy doing the detail work. Doesn't mean they can't do it, but they prefer not to have to do it. And you may find as a manager that you don't like to have to do some of the detail work, but you know that you've got to get it done. You just have to work harder to get them to do it. And it could be a cause of frustration for somebody. You know, you may have a high-producing recruiter whose paperwork is sometimes a little sloppy, and they're like, boss, I'm giving you the numbers. Well, unfortunately, the paperwork has to follow the numbers as well. So it's something to talk to people about, and there are actually some CDs, the RX CDs online, that people can actually use, that Mr. Barnes can help you with, that can actually help people bring up those behaviors and make them easier for them to accomplish in the work environment. Any questions on that behavioral hierarchy? Mr. Whiteley, would you go over the Style Insights graph, because there is one major change there for people. We're using a new format.
So if we'll flip over to page 21, if you'll notice it, we still have two graphs there. They're still identified pretty much, or they're in the same kind of order that they were before. We had an adapted style, and we had a natural style. If you'll remember, the natural style graph is the real me, or the real you, and the adapted style is what Mr. Brooks used to say is a facade, or now that we'll refer to it as maybe on the job, how we respond on the job. And so if you'll look, the big difference that we have here now, if you'll notice, the letters are a little bit different. Used to be doer, talker, pacer, controller, and now it's identified as dominance, which was the old doer, influencing, which was the old talker, steadiness, which was the pacer, and compliance, which was the controller. If you'll remember, as a dominance, this is how we respond to problems and challenges. influencing, how we respond to people and contact. Steadiness, how we respond to pace and consistency. And compliance is how we respond to procedures and constraints. The Brooks Group is going to deliver a CBT program this month that will focus on the characteristics of each behavior style, but pretty much they pretty much go hand in hand with the way they previously did with the doer, talker, pacer, controller format. Any questions? Some of you may have already seen, hopefully, I think as you get these and as you've been receiving your training, you should have the little cue cards. For a while now, we've had the dominance doers, influencing talkers, steadiness pacer, and compliance controller names on each one of those cards. Hopefully you have some of those. If not, I'm sure that the training section can get with the Brooks Group and get you some of those. They're real handy cards to have.
All right, very good, Mr. Whiteley. Let's move on now to a different part of the assessment, the motivators. And these are the drivers for people, why they do things, why they want to get rewarded. In fact, it's the motivators that will initiate the behaviors that we have talked about. People will behave in a certain way because they want to achieve certain things. Now, the report measures six basic interests, all right? And on this particular page 22 in the motivators section, we also get the strength of each one of these motivators. And on the next page, Mr. Whiteley is going to go over the definitions of them, but we want to show you here how they are scored as far as strength. So in John Doe's case, the utilitarian and the individualistic are strong. In other words, these particular motivators are very important to John Doe, and these are what he will work to achieve. All right. Now, you'll see that his third and fourth motivators, theoretical and social, are what we call situational. In other words, there are times when that motivator becomes very important to the person, and at other times, it's not really that important. It depends on what's going on in your life. And usually, like I say, you'll find situational to be your third and fourth scores. Your fifth and sixth scores are often rated as indifferent. In other words, they're not important to people at all. An example from myself is I have a very, very low aesthetic score. For me, it's all about function rather than form. You won't find me going to art museums or really noticing things for their pure beauty. It doesn't mean I can't appreciate a nice painting or a picture or a beautiful, you know, piece of scenery, but it's not as critical to me. So it's not something I work towards. For example, if somebody were to reward me with a flower, I would say thank you, but it wouldn't be really exciting for me. So it's important that we understand what motivates each people, each person on the team. And Mr. Whiteley, you've got the definitions of each of these motivators, and we'll talk about why they're important.
I'm going to go over a brief definition of each one. Just keep in mind that each one of these has a detailed explanation on pages 23 to 28. So if you'll flip to page 23, utilitarian, this is primarily an individual who values or has a motivator and an interest in money and what is useful, achievement and recognition, which is very important to them. Flip it over to page 24, individualistic. This is someone who's interested in power, independence, and the ability to influence over others. Page 25 is theoretical, an interest in discovery of truth, knowledge for knowledge's sake. These are the people that will read the regulation or the instruction, AFI, a few times a year. This is someone who, you know, turn over to the, learning channel, just looking for things to learn for learning's sake. Flip over on page 26, you have this individual that's social. This is an inherent love of people, selflessness. These will be the individuals that have this motivator or this value system, then they'll be the ones that will do most of your waivers. They'll try to save everyone. So we call them waiver kings and queens. Flip it over to page 27. Then you have traditional. This is an individual that has a belief in unity, order, and tradition, defined rules, regulations, and principles for living. You know, a lot of times your people that are very spiritual, they'll have a high motivator, and it's traditional. Flip it over to page 28. Then you have aesthetic. This is a relative interest in form and harmony and appreciation of beauty in their surroundings. just the person that walks in your office, if the picture is slightly crooked on the wall, they'll walk over and fix it because it'll just drive them crazy to have to sit there. In fact, they can't pay attention to what you're going to say because, you know, it's the environment around them is out of order. It's a little chaos there for them. So they'll have to take care of that. So, Mr. Reiner, can we let's move on to some motivators now, some norms and some comparisons.
Right, right. We've defined the meaning of each of the motivators, and a moment ago I talked about whether something is passionate for somebody or indifferent or what we call situational or really mainstream. And on the example on page 29, you'll see for John Doe, theoretical, his score, there's a red star right around the 50th percentile. So he's mainstream. Sometimes the theoretical becomes important for him, sometimes it's not as important. But if you take a look at his utilitarian score, it's way out to the right. So for somebody like John Doe, it is very important that he, you know, he be earning money. And, you know, we know where certain limitations are in the military. We don't give bonuses for production. But this is the type of person, I guarantee you, John Doe may have some business on the side. He may have some investments or some sort of part-time occupation outside of recruiting, because he's so interested in earning extra income. He may also be interested in recognition. And so this is the kind of person that you have to publicly recognize on a regular basis if they're doing a good job. You'll see aesthetic. It's a very low score. It's not important at all to John Doe. All right. Social, lower score. Now, in a case like that, what does that mean? Well, it means John Doe is probably somebody who he doesn't hate people, but he feels people ought to basically help themselves. And he'll help the truly needy. He's probably less likely with a score like this to run waivers unless he really needs it for the production purposes, in which case the utilitarian causes him to go from a situational type of environment to a very important, passionate one. Individualistic, this particular person is passionate. They want freedom to do their job. They want independence. They want to control their own destiny. All right. This chances are this person, John Doe, probably wants your job as quickly as they can get it. And then you see the traditional, it's a very low score, indifferent. It doesn't mean that John Doe is going to break the rules. Chance John Doe is going to push the envelope. And when that happens, you do kind of have to keep an eye on somebody like that just to make sure they're still staying within the instructions for the Air Force Reserve. And so those are the norms and comparisons. And it allows you to see how important a particular motivator is for somebody. Now, let's go over to page 31, and we're going to have two graphs on this page, on page 31 and 32, that really say the same thing. They're just presented in a different format. So on page 31, again on a 0 to 10 scale, you see the scores for each of the motivators. And obviously number one for John Doe is utilitarian economic. And you see he is far to the right. He's passionate about those things. Whereas as you move towards the bottom to item number 6, the aesthetic, a very low score. It's not important to him. Now, if we flip over to page 32, we see the motivation insights graph. Instead of a horizontal graph, it's a vertical graph. And it's color-coded. And you can see how the different bars score against each other. There's lines that go across the middle of those columns in some cases, and those represent the 50th percentile. So, again, this gives you a picture view, and you can see that utilitarian and individualistic are very important to John Doe. So understanding the motivators is important because you can use the motivators to reward your people. For example, if somebody is high theoretical and they do a great job, maybe they win a contest that you've got, you can reward them by sending them to a class, giving them a book. That's what they'll appreciate because they like learning. Somebody who's high utilitarian, well, maybe you take them out to lunch or you give them a plaque or something like that for their I Love Me wall because they'll enjoy the recognition. Somebody who's high aesthetic, could be you give them a plant, something like that, or tell them that it's up to you to redecorate the office here, be in charge of that. The high social person, they may be a person who probably does a lot of charity work on the side. Maybe they're a scoutmaster, a coach. They volunteer down at their church, whatever, giving them time off to do something like that. The individualistic, if they're doing a good job, reward them with the opportunity to take charge of something. And the traditional, if they have a high score, reward them by maybe having them look over your office instructions or write, you know, some sort of general set of rules for the organization. So use those motivators to get people to get to the places they want to get to. Okay. Any questions on those? Okay, if not, Mr. Whiteley, this is part of the new section of the TriMetrics, and that is integrating the behaviors and the motivators, the importance of the two going together. As we said, the motivators drive the behaviors.
Yeah, if you'll flip over to page 33, you'll see that. And we're talking about integrating behaviors and motivators. What happens is this: if we can get a person, if we can figure out how to get them things that motivate them so that we have them working in that direction along with the right behaviors that they have, if we can mirror those two together, partner them up, man, it makes their environment a lot easier, a lot better to work with. If you look over on page, on pages 34 to 38 offer, you know, all the supervisors and managers some insight as to how to use the combined power of the behaviors and the motivators to get the most out of their people. Let's look. Start. Just look at page 34 to start with. If you'll look here, this section describes the potential areas of strength between John Doe's behavior style and his top two motivators. If you'll remember, his behavior style is influencing steadiness. Those are his two primary parts. And then talker pacer. And so it in the old terminology, it would be a talker pacer. So influencing steadiness is our new DISC format. And his motivators are utilitarian, individualistic. So now then, you want to start looking at here are the potential things that give him, that bring strength to the organization. If you'll read through those, it looks, again, most of those are very positive things for you to look at and to work with. If you'll look here, also, on page 34, if you look, it says, you know, good at selling reliable products and service to people he knows. If you'll think about this, you know, with his utilitarian and individualistic motivators, is important in not only money but resources and how to use those resources effectively. And you know, also because his behavior style is influencing, he likes to talk, especially with people that he knows. These are the things that will bring him strength, him or her strength. If you'll flip over to page 35, now these are some areas that could cause some potential conflict between the behavior style and the two top motivators. And so look here and let's talk about, why do you think that John Doe may overlook details when weighing results? It's a potential, not necessarily that he does it all the time. But it says he may overlook details when weighing results. What do you think? Why do you think he may do that? Have you had any I'll call them, we got to probably quit calling them talkers and start calling them influencing. But these folks that like to talk a lot, do you think sometimes that do you think if you have recruiters in that situation, do you think they may have a tendency sometimes to skip over some details, get sidetracked, talk about other things? So these are some things that could potentially cause the individual some trouble. How about now the person that's probably going to pay close attention to that and the results would be someone who has a compliant behavior style. So if you look over at look at the very last one. This is the one here we'll talk about. A fear of change prevents him from advancing. So there's two things here. You know that as a individualistic, he seeks power. So his motivator is power, and he wants to, you know, be in his own, you know, in position to be in charge of his own future or destiny. However, you know, because he's also steadiness, behavior style, there's a conflict there. He doesn't like change necessarily. So these are things that you may have an opportunity to help them grow with. It's going to be tough, but you'll be able to point out these things that, that are causing them to slow down, the behavior that, that causes them not to like change, and then but the motivator, which they want to be in charge of their own destiny. So these things are working against one another. Any questions? So these are just potential problems that you may have, and they're not really problems. They're just areas of concern that you need to be aware of in order to help your person grow. And I think it's extremely important. You know, the more you can have their behavior style and their motivators working hand in hand, just the more productive recruiter you're going to be and the happier they're going to be. And when they're happy, when they're at their happiest, they're going to be putting people in boots, and then it's going to make you happy.
All right. Earlier, excuse me, a great question was raised about, you know, motivating, managing, and, you know, creating an environment that really works for the recruiter. Well, that's what these next two pages are, 37, 38.
Let me get this message, Max. Can you give me a call back, 757?
He's talking to somebody on the phone right now. I think you might be on the wrong line. Okay. So I was saying, somebody asked a question about, you know, the work environment and creating the ideal environment, motivating people, and managing people. And that's what these next three pages are going to do. On page 36, we have what we call the ideal environment. This is based on the behavior style, the natural behavioral style of John Doe and his or her top two motivators. So, for example, we have a person here who likes to get along with people. He's a talker pacer or influencing steadiness style, wants to get along with people, but yet he's interested in advancement, he's interested in money and everything like that. So these are the type of things that John Doe is going to want in the work environment. All right, take a look at the third one example, assignments with a high degree of people contacts. That's because he likes people, all right, but he wants people-oriented returns that are rewarded with higher than task-oriented returns. So he wants to be with people, and he wants to be rewarded for doing good things with people as opposed to paperwork type of tasks, right? He wants to be around people that say, we can get it done, who are optimistic, all right? So that's where the motivators and the behaviors come together, and it's really important when you assign people some additional duties. In particular, you may have special events coming along, to take a look at the ideal environment for somebody and say, who would be the best person to take on this particular project because it would fit their behavior style and motivators, and they're more likely to do a good job. And so that's a helpful tool in this particular case, and it's your job as a supervisor to help create that ideal environment. But you can only do that if you know what's important to the person and what their behavior style is. Now, Mr. Whiteley, on page 37, how do we keep these people motivated on a regular basis?
I think if you'll go over this with them, I think it's important. You'll notice that, you know, just a few examples here of what John wants. You know, a friendly work environment, freedom to talk and participate on the team, you know, time to prove the process for achieving return on investment. These are just some examples of the things that are keys to motivating John in his work environment. So it's always real good to sit down periodically and review this with John as this example, and to find out whether or not they're being satisfied or not. You can take a look at some of these, and you may think, as an example, you may think you've created a friendly work environment, but their perception could be different. So it's always good to just sit down with them, review it, go over with them, and see what you can do to help pinpoint these keys to motivating them. Again, and I don't remember who it was that asked the question, but she was kind of wanting to know, hey, how is it? How is it? Now we know all these things. How do we make sure that we're motivating them to do, you know, get the most optimal results that we can from them? And these things will help you identify that as well. And the key thing here goes back to communication. If you'll communicate with your troop, you and he or she can be on the same page of music. It'll work out best for everyone.
All right, let's move on to the keys to managing, and that's on page 38. And these are the needs that your recruiter would need to be successful in a work environment. These needs must be met. Now, sometimes the member can meet these needs on their own, but sometimes they need assistance from you as the leader. So we recommend that you have the person review this list and pick out three or four needs that are most important to the person. For example, this could be a person because of their behavior style where they're the influencing steadiness, where they like to talk and they're not big on change. They tend to require things really spelled out for them. So like the example says here, John needs a manager who delegates in detail. Now, we know some managers will say, just go do it, or I'm confident that you can get it done, and give minimal instruction. For some workers, they enjoy that. They're like, hey, I can find my own way to get it done, and I appreciate that. Give me the independence. Somebody else says, you know what? I really need specific details. When do you want it? Where do you want it? How do you want it? Things like that. So it's important that you discuss that with people. That would be very, very helpful for them. So that's just one example right there. When assigning a project, you know, again, make sure that it meets the requirements of this person's behaviors and motivators. They'll be much more successful when you have especially those additional duties out there. Very, very valuable to understand what this person needs in the environment. And keep in mind, we like to say this, and we teach this in the management course, and that is you have to treat everybody on your team fairly, but you don't have to manage them the same. Somebody brought up a question yesterday where they said, you know, can I give one person freedom to do one thing and somebody not else? I have to micromanage them. The answer is yes. Some people have earned the flexibility in their job. They don't have to check in every time they want to do something. Some people have to be held on a tight leash. It's up to you as a manager to decide. But each person can be managed differently because sometimes people have different needs. For example, you might have a recruiter on your team who has a special needs child, and maybe that child has to go to therapy or a medical appointment in the morning once a week. Is it okay to change that recruiter's work hours? Yes, definitely. And you can do something for somebody else on the team. Most people won't mind as long as they understand the reasons for the differences. So again, you don't have to manage everybody the same. You merely have to manage them fairly. Any questions or comments on those points? If not, Mr. Whiteley, the next part of the assessment is what we call the Acumen Capacity Index, and that starts on page 39, and this is where the new reports really come in handy.
Right, if everyone will turn over to page 39, this, you know, in the old coaching reports, we call this area personal skills and dimensional balance. If you'll remember, when you took the assessment, you had two sets of 18 statements. That first set of 18 statements, this would help describe how you see the world, if you will, and the world around you. These statements come from the first set of 18 statements that a person was asked to rank order while they were taking the assessment. If you'll remember, things like poisoning the city water or a lover's embrace, those types of statements. And you were asked to prioritize or to rank order those. And those would help identify the way you see the world or the world around you. And on page 40, you have a self view there, and this is obviously is how you see yourself. These statements came from the second set of statements where you had to rank order statements such as I love myself, I hate my work, I love my job, you know, those types of things, and that would help identify there the things and how you see yourself. If you look at, and it has each of the statements here, based on those things you can take a look at. You know, sometimes people see themselves, they're self-aware, they see themselves in a very good light. Sometimes it's not so good. Same way with the world around them. And so this will help you kind of see that. And Mr. Reinert, as we go along, he'll explain a little bit more as to what some of these things mean.
All right, let's go to page 41 and what we call the development indicator. And this is new to the reports. These were not in the coaching reports, excuse me, that we had in the past. The report measures 23 personal skills. Now, personal skills, we sometimes call them the soft skills. They're below the surface, and we sometimes used to say that they are the multipliers of success. And these particular skills, to a certain extent, people are born with them, and it's some people either have them or they don't. For example, how many of you out there, I'll ask this rhetorically, have known somebody that you've worked with who it's never their fault? You know, when something goes wrong, it's always somebody else to blame. It's the MEPS. It's the wing commander. It's a fellow recruiter. It's the applicant. They never put the responsibility on themselves. Well, that's a score in things like, you know, personal accountability, which is very, very important. And in the John Doe report, we see, for example, that there are 23 scores. Now, in this particular area, they are scored as well-developed, developed, moderately developed, or needs development. So a kind of a high to low score. Now, in this example, and it's not really a good one because almost all of John Doe's scores are very, very strong. Most of us are not like that. Most of us have scores that are well-developed, and we have some that could be moderately developed or need development. And that's something that can be identified with the report. And we do have a program, the RXCDs, which will help people to improve these particular skills. Now, a moment ago, I said either you have them or you don't. Well, if you don't have them, it's a little bit hard to develop them, but you can refine them a little bit. You can become aware of them and work on these kind of things. And again, the RXCD program will help you tremendously with that. And on pages 42 to 45, you'll see some bar charts for the personal skills. And you'll see, for example, that on page 42, leading others is the strongest personal skill that John Doe has. So that's something that he or she would feel very comfortable with. They're very comfortable with interpersonal skills. However, if we go over a couple of pages and we get down to their lower scores, for example, 23, conceptual thinking, and it's got the definition there, it's still a good score, but it's the lower one. But you're going to find, like I say, in the real world, you're going to have recruiters that have some very low scores, and it's important that you take those areas with the low scores and direct them to the RXCD online program. And if you have problems with that program, Mr. Barnes from the Brooks Group will be happy to help you out. You can register online for that program on the website, and if there are any issues, again, they can be fixed. Now, those are the personal skills, and like I said, they can be multipliers of success. And on page 46, the external factors and the internal factors are part of what's called dimensional balance. And again, this chart reflects how the people did those two sets of 18 statements. The external factors are what we call the worldview, the internal, the self-view. And this takes a lot of professional experience to really interpret these bars. So for assistance, I suggest that you contact Mr. Barnes at the Brooks Group, and he or one of the other members of the team will certainly give you a one-on-one private feedback session on these scores and what they mean. So, any questions on this part of the assessment, particularly with the personal skills?
Sir.
Go ahead. All right, if there's no question, then Mr. Barnes or Mr. Whiteley, we've wrapped up this part of the assessment, the ACI. Let's spend a few minutes on the Military Recruiting Skills Index because that's all we have left.
We only have a couple minutes, so I just wanted to, if you open up your Sales Strategy Index coaching report there, you'll notice that when the recruiter or when you took the assessment, it was a 54-question test that measured a person's knowledge of the impact selling system in a military recruiting environment. Questions were divided into the steps of the impact, plus it also had some general knowledge questions, just overall general sales type questions, nothing specific to impact, if you will. There were four multiple choice answers to each question. Each of the answers, you had a best strategy, a second best strategy, which is also a good answer, a fair strategy, and a poor strategy. And Mr. Reinert, talk to us about how we break these down.
Yes. If everybody would go to pages 2 and 3, you'll see what we call the category analysis. And it's broken down by steps of the impact selling system, investigate through, tie it up, plus a G for general. And the general questions were things like, you know, what do you do with your telephone during an interview? Why is it important to keep records? In other words, questions that didn't fit into a particular step of impact, but were nevertheless important for someone who's out there doing recruiting work. And so if we look at the investigate step, there were 9 questions on the assessment that dealt with the investigate step. And in this particular case, John Doe, 6 out of 9 times, he chose what was called the most effective or the best strategy. Now, 3 out of 9 times, he chose the second best answer. And we'll get into the importance of the second best answer in just a few minutes. But his primary effective readiness rating is 6 for 9. So 67% of the time, he chose the very best answer. And it does this throughout the entire 6 steps of impact plus the general. So that's a breakdown by category. But Mr. Whiteley, you'll talk about a breakdown by questions now.
Yes, as I said before, if you look over on page 4 and 5, we'll talk here. This is the question analysis here. You'll be able to see if you look at the top of the page there, 33 times he picked the most effective strategy, 13 times it was the second most effective, and 2 times it was the third most effective strategy as the number one, and 6 times chose the least effective strategy as the number one choice. What this does for you is this. What's important for you to know is this. If an individual has 40 or more of selecting the first and or the second most effective strategy, they're in pretty decent shape. The other thing that this report does for you here is it'll show you if they chose the least effective strategy as their number one, you'll have a breakdown of the question and also the answer to that question so that you'll be able to see the types of things that they were asked and why it may have been that they chose that particular strategy, something for you to work on. Someone asked yesterday, what's the importance of this report? Well, this really goes to show you where an individual's strengths or weaknesses may be in the impact selling system, okay? And especially if they have a natural ability to do it, or you're going to have to work with them to help them have an adapted ability to take care of those things in impact.
All right, let's flip over a page to page 6, and this particular bar chart is what we call the primary effectiveness rating. And what it does is it compares the results of the recruiter against a group of top performers. Several years ago when we normed this particular assessment, we took a group of top performing recruiters, historically top people from the Air Force Reserve and the Air National Guard, and we gave them the questions and they answered it, and we looked to see what percentage of people got the questions right versus got them with the wrong answers. And we created the norm for the top performers. So on the primary effectiveness rating, we can see that in the investigate step, John's GI Joseph score is higher than that of top sales performers or recruiters. He is stronger in both the investigate and the meet. He's behind in the probe and the apply and the convince, and he's ahead in the tie it up and the general. That is only measuring, though, where he chose the very best answer. Now, while that's valuable, we do agree that the number two answer, in many cases, depending on where you're located, could be just as good of an answer. So on the next page, Mr. Whiteley, you're going to give him credit for both the primary and the secondary answers.
That's exactly right. And in most cases, the charts are exactly the same, except now we're assessing an individual whether or not they chose the first and second best answer, best strategy as an option. And so you can start to look here. You can see that against the top performers, you look like you may have a little bit of area. You might want some work in possibly the meet step. It looks like apply, maybe a little bit in the tied up. So this gives you an idea or a place to go and to start in some specific areas to start working with your recruiter. Overall, I mean, if they're ranking up there and they're over in the final chart over there and they're ahead of the top sales performers, you're in pretty good shape. And in both cases, even in the number one strategy and the first and second strategy as their number one choice, in this situation, GI Joseph was ahead of your top sales performer. So you got a pretty good troop to work with, but that's not the case in all cases. So it's a good idea to go over the report, take a look at it, and see what you got to work with.
Now, one of the things that can be very helpful after you look at this report, if you take a look, most people complete this, you know, generally before they come into recruiting as part of their assessment, but you can have this given to somebody who's been out there for a while just to get a view of their skills, or maybe you can even use it for somebody just coming out of recruiting school to see where their strengths are. And you can use it for your team by taking advantage of the Sales of Your Product, which is an online product that contains 52 lessons broken down into various categories of recruiting skills. And these particular programs can be completed individually or as part of a group training session. Mr. Barnes at the Bruce Group can help you. As one of the recruiters told us yesterday at the end of the program, she's getting ready for a training meeting, and she said she really likes using the Sales Year because it comes complete with an Air Force Form 623A, so the training is already documented when you complete a particular lesson, and then you have it as a permanent record for each one of the team members. So again, it's a Sales Year product. It's available online, and again, if you're having trouble registering for it or using it, Mr. Barnes at the Brooks Group can help you. Well, Mr. Whiteley, we're about out of time. We went a couple of minutes over. I apologize for that, but we had a lot of material to cover. So before we wrap it up, were there any questions or comments from the field?
Yes, sir. This is Sergeant Hudson.
Go ahead, Sergeant Hudson.
A real quick question. Is there any, like, have you ever validated on that last section a new recruiter versus a certified recruiter to see how much changes have occurred? Or is there value to even, again, compare recruiters as they're going, you know, every 2-3 years when we redo a new impact or TriMetrics, should we be comparing them to see if they've changed?
I think it's a good idea. I think, you know, and hopefully your scores should go up. You know, I wouldn't expect a brand new recruiter, although I've seen some people take this before they went to recruiting school, and they've done very well on the assessment. You know, because they just have a natural ability to recognize, you know, how a sales interaction should take place. But it's a good way to follow up, especially sometimes if you have a recruiter who may be sort of falling off, you know, that their production is going down. They may have gotten a little bit sloppy or lazy in some areas, and we can measure to see whether or not it's a knowledge problem. Do they have the knowledge? Sometimes they keep the knowledge up, but they've just become lazy or burned out. And so then it becomes more of an attitudinal problem, and that can be spotted in the assessment in what we call the dimensional balance. There's where the interpretation help from the Brooks Group, Mr. Barnes, can be extremely helpful. Does that answer your question?
Yes, sir. Thank you.
All right. Any other questions?
Mr. Rona, this is Chief Haynes. How are you?
Great, Roger. How you doing?
I'm good, sir. Hey, I got a question for you on the new changes. Are there going to be any changes to that comparison report?
Yes.
That's a great question, Mr. Barnes. Will you still be doing comparison reports, and what changes might occur?
We are going to, as part of this year's contract work, we are going to be doing new benchmarks. It will probably be this summer. There's been a little transition up there at the headquarters, but that is on our ticket to go ahead and redo the benchmarks to better align with the new measure, what's being measured. So very valid question. Yes, we are addressing that this year.
Okay, great. Those are really effective, and I highly recommend those reports if anybody has not used them. They're very eye-opening, and Mr. Barnes has been really helpful with those as well. So just want to put that out there. Thanks for that.
Great. Great question. Thank you, Chief. Anyone else? All right. Rather than Mr. Whiteley handle this, Mr. Barnes, this is really your territory. Is there anybody who needs to make this program up?
If for some reason you came on extremely late and you need to make it up, we will be putting the information online. Just shoot me an email. Let me know you need the material. And if you have not emailed me to let me know that you are on the call, please do so at gbarnes, G-B-A-R-N-E-S, @thebrooksgroup.com. And again, on brooksafrc.com, you can go to the RxCD Onlines for the TriMetrics materials and the Sales Library for the selling skills. If you need help navigating through that, we do know there's a few computer issues right now, sluggish, we're working it, should be ready to go tomorrow. You can still access it, just be patient. And appreciate everybody being out there. Sergeant Parker, are you still out there?
Yes, sir.
Hey, a little birdie told me, and it's way too late to sing to you, but happy birthday.
Thank you, sir.
All
you
right.
You always sing to me.
No, I'm not going to hold everyone up and torture them. But we do appreciate you all being on. Thank you, Mr. Reiner, Mr. Whiteley. Great information today. If y'all need assistance with the TriMetrics, always know you can reach out to me for either just general questions, or if you'd like to debrief your own or have me assist with the debrief, just let me know. And we appreciate everything y'all do, and thank you very much. Y'all have a great day.
Thank you, everybody.
Great day.
Thanks, everybody. Appreciate it.
All right.
Yeah,
go.
NRF.
Take care, man.